T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
You love him, former Golden State Warrior. He's in 28 minutes at 8:30. Sean Salisbury, former NFL quarterback, set to join us in just a few minutes. Today's show is brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full service banking, no compromises. We've been taking a lot of calls today. Phone lines, text line, Chilton Auto Body open as well. 888-957-9570. 888-957-9570. Let's pivot to football as we get set for Salisbury to join us. All things Cam Newton, all things Antonio Brown and beyond. Lo, help me out with something. Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, has a story. According to a source, there are several teams in the NFL that are considering road travel this year, in which they fly into the town on a game day, play the team, and then fly out that night. They'd be skipping the hotel situation. Now, I don't think he's implying that when the Niners go to play the Jets, you're going to fly into New York City, play the Jets, and then fly out the same day. But for teams that play on the East Coast, maybe New England down to the Jets, maybe Philadelphia to, you know, the Pittsburgh Steelers or the Dallas Cowboys, maybe you can find it out that way. I mean, if it avoids COVID and it's the safest way, maybe it's a good option. But how taxing would that be on the player body? Like, if you had to go from the Chargers, if you were playing in San Diego and you had to fly up to Oakland, play, and then fly back all in the same day, how much of a disadvantage would that put you at?
I think it does put a team at a disadvantage a little bit. And here's the thing, though. As long as, you know, you got a 1 o'clock or maybe a 2 o'clock kick, because usually you're by the facility by 8 o'clock. If you're lifting weights that day, you have to be there by 7 in the weight room by 7:15 if you're late. So if you have everyone there at 7, so that's what your body's used to being at the facility at 7. Now, if you're telling guys, hey, look, you don't have to be in necessarily a suit. I want you guys in sweats. I want you guys kind of relaxed. So if you're there at 7 o'clock still, you know, you're 7 o'clock, you're there, you stretch 30 minutes, you eat, you're on the bus at 8 o'clock or 7:45, 8, you travel to the airport 15, 20 minutes away, 45 minute flight. So now you're in Oakland, you know, at the stadium, you know, land 9 o'clock, nine o'clock, you're in the stadium by 10. So now you still got 3 hours. If you did those things, it'd still be different. It'd still be different for the body, but at the same sense, at least you're still there 3 hours before. You only had a 40-minute flight, and now it's about how focused can you be, how quick you get your body to adjust and get your mind right. But if you do those things, I think that you're fine, because your body still wouldn't be necessarily going through a lot, because you're waking up the same time, you're getting to the facility the same time, and now, you know, you don't even think about when you're usually practicing during the week. You're usually practicing at about 1 or 12 o'clock, or sometimes 11 o'clock, because, you know, usually have lunch and then afterwards you got meetings afterwards, or you eat lunch and have practice afterwards. So either way, your body's still in that same type of rim. So I think that it would be okay, as long as, like you just alluded to, if it wasn't a 4 or 5 hour flight. Anything under an hour and a half or 2 hours, I think it's doable. I wouldn't do anything over 2 hours.
Dibs, you betting the home teams in these situations?
Yes, every single time, because everything you laid out, Lo, is accurate, and I love the timeline as far as, just how much effort and energy you'd have to expend, but ultimately you're still going up to 36,000 feet, and I know what that does to my body, which is not a finely tuned athletic body, but anybody's body. You get into a little bit of swelling, even if it's just an hour, hour and a half flight. You know, we've all taken them to L.A. or San Diego or whatever. Still just going up in the air, the physical nature of flying, I think, does take a little bit out of you. And if you only have say, 4 hours to recover between your flight and your game, I think that would definitely be a big advantage to the home team, even if it was only an hour flight.
The thing that terrifies me about this isn't this plan. It's that this plan probably makes more sense than staying in a hotel. So how many guys travel, low, to an away game? Like, give me the roster, coaches, trainers. Like, what's that total group look like roughly?
Honestly, I would say trainers, because the media is on that plane with you. They're sitting in the back. You got your media guys there. You have your trainers, you know, some of your front office people. You got your 57, you know, all your active and guys that are not active, they're going to. So I would say easy, without a doubt, 80 to 100 people.
All right,
no question.
80 to 100 people. Now, we're going to put 80 to 100 people on a plane. Let's say that plane starts in the Bay Area, and it's got to go to Phoenix for a game against the Cardinals. You're going to fly down to Arizona. Oh, hey, Arizona's having an awful outbreak right now. Absolutely awful, because they opened everything up way too early, mismanaged everything, and now the state is just, it's a mess. So you have these 80 to 100 guys fly in, but you're not going to fly back the same day. So you're going to get off the plane, and then you're going to have to get into some sort of transportation to a hotel, at which point, what? Every single room and every single surface has been wiped down in this hotel. So all these guys, all these media members are going to spend a night in a hotel, in hotel rooms, and then they're going to get transported to a stadium, play a game, go back to a plane. They're all going to be together, right? Then they're going to fly back. You're going to do this with every single team for every single road game and hope that no one ends up picking up COVID-19. Because if they do, you get on that plane, you can infect everybody, right? You're going to be coming into contact with everyone. Like, think about one mistake at a hotel. And you could fly to the Bay Area. You could fly to L.A. to play the Rams or the Chargers. And this state's a little bit more strict with everything. Like, the beaches in L.A. County are going to be closed this weekend. But you go to Georgia, you go to any of the Texas teams, you go to Arizona, you go to Florida, it's a completely different situation there. All you need is the one guy to find himself with this, and it could infect the whole team and wipe him out. That's what's got me so worried about the NFL season. I didn't even think of it from that perspective yet. And while I want football worse than anyone, I don't know how you're going to have all this travel throughout the course of the season, Dibs, and somehow find a way to avoid that issue from creeping up.
It just can come at you so quickly, too. I tweeted out a link to an article that I found this morning in the New York Times about super spreaders and the fact that a few people are really the ones responsible for the majority of the spread, and you don't really know who these individuals are. Obviously, you don't know what that situation is. But to your point, if you have a traveling party of 80 or 100 people, if one person's infected and one of those people who is infected is one of these, quote, super spreaders, you could find 25 or 30 members of one organization who get infected. And then what does that do to that team? If a whole team has to be quarantined, what does it do to the competitive balance of the league, et cetera?
Lo, what are you thinking about that? Like, the idea of how much risk? I mean, like, for example, do you order room service when you're staying at a hotel on the road?
You can. Do I order it all the time? No. Sometimes, yeah. But most of the time, Joe, you get on the road. Time you get to the hotel, if you're flying to Oakland, or it's, you know, usually the day before you fly, you leave at 1 o'clock, 1 or 2 o'clock. Flight leaves at 1 or 2. Leave at 2. Get to the airport at, you know, land at 3:30. You're at your hotel by 5. You got 2 hours if you want to do something. You can go to dinner. If not, you got dinner. Dinner and stuff at 6-7, so you can be there. They're going to have it for you at down. They have a place for you at the hotel to go and eat. Then you have, you know, special teams meeting at 7, team meeting. So it's pretty tight when you're on those road trips like that. You don't have a lot of downtime. So if you're going to order room service, maybe it's a late night if you want to order something, but more than likely you're not, because time you get out of meetings, it's 9 o'clock. They have a snack at the hotel in your meeting room. You just walk one door over, and that's where you got your pastas, your burgers, your food, if you want to eat something at night. So it's really not a lot of need for room service, Joe, but there are some guys that get it still.
All right, let's go to the phones. Former NFL quarterback. You can check him out now as the host of the Sean Salisbury Show, 6 to 10 a.m. Central on Sports Talk 790 in Houston. Sean Salisbury, kind enough to join us here on 95.7 The Game. Sean, we always appreciate the time. We'll bring you right into the conversation. A report from Pro Football Talk that NFL teams may travel when they're going on the road, fly into the city on game day, play the game, get back on the plane, fly out that night. Probably doesn't work for cross-country trips, but for shorter trips in the Northeast, East Coast, could you see that being a viable alternative to staying in a hotel and taking the risk of COVID-19?
Yeah, I could see it. And anytime we say, well, but it can't happen, players can't, they're not going to be comfortable. Well, 2020 is not comfortable. There's nothing about 2020 right now that seems normal to any of us and any player. I mean, you're just going to have to make adjustments. And Denny Green, my coach in Minnesota, was the best I ever dealt with. It, he didn't care. He would always address us. And I know a pandemic's different, but late to the – he said, I don't care if the team plane is late 10 minutes and you're off your schedule. Don't care if your laundry came out, it's wet. Don't care if the burger was cold at snack. I'll take care of that after the effect, but we're not dealing – distractions don't live here. We're still going to play. It doesn't matter. We'll handle those later. You still do your thing. He was great at – not allow, or you're in an argument with your girlfriend before you get on the plane. Didn't he want to know part of that? And he was great at putting distractions, hanging them outside, and then when you walk in the building, we're playing football. I don't care about all that. The team bus is late. It's hot. Your air conditioning broke. Didn't matter. So, it's hard for, let's say, a 1 o'clock game. I'm trying to picture, even if it's an hour and 45-minute flight, getting up, flying in, and going right to the stadium like we do in a high school bus on a Friday night. It's going to be weird. Because the rest, right. And that'll encourage the leading up to the week, you getting some rest. Now, I don't know how you'd protocol of if you had a hotel that was just your team for that weekend and going in, because you don't do a lot when you get to the city. You go through walkthrough, you go to your room, you have a team meetings through the day, snack at night, and your butt's in bed, and the lights are out by 11 o'clock. You wake up, and most guys, quick breakfast, quick meeting, or at the stadium. So the right. Travel, but if you want to play, you may have to make adjustments. You may have to say, if the Giants are playing Philly, dude, we're just taking the train or we're flying in or we're bussing it in and it's the morning of, and that's just the way it's going to work. So it'll be difficult logistics-wise, but you know what? Oh, well. We don't know if it's going to snow. You don't know if it's going to rain. Oh, well. If you got to travel the day of a game like we did on a Friday night high school, deal with it. That's just the way it is. Everybody's in the same situation. I hope they can go in the night before. It's short travel for the players anyway. We're not there long, like baseball, sure. 4 or 5 days to adjust. We go in and we play, and it's a business trip, and you get your butt out. So they'll adjust either way, but I would imagine more sluggish performances if you go in on the day of a game. I would imagine that.
Daniel?
Yeah, I think that's going to be an interesting thing. And how does that favor or not favor teams with veterans and teams with veteran coaches? Would you look at a more established organization, maybe a team that was together the year before, as one that would have an advantage in this scenario?
Yeah, and a team that's filled with guys that, like I was mentioning about Denny Green, that just say, guys, because, you know, people follow, young players, they follow leadership. It's like, even if they don't want to do it, if I'm watching... When I broke in the league, the way Steve Largent and Kenny Easley, my rookie year in Seattle, it didn't matter. Whatever they were doing was the right thing. And they weren't going to let that kind of stuff creep in. So the leadership, it's when you get the 3 or 4 or 6 guys who are influential, who are bitching and complaining, and, oh, I can't do this. This isn't my normal routine. That permeates through a team. So that is a great point by you that you're going to have strong leadership. And a coach that, quite frankly, and a staff, that we just don't tolerate it. Guys, you got to know going in. Even if we play a full season and it starts on time, things are just going to be different. No fans in the stands, the way we eat, where you sit on the bus, how we travel. Now, in a perfect world, you'd hope that the last thing they address, because I'm thinking, well, how will it affect COVID? What's wrong with going in the night before if it's just your team and the hotel you guys have booked is just yours? Why would that affect players getting more sick than not? I guess because you're out of your own home. But even at home games, we stay at a hotel. Now, that may not be the case this year. So, veteran leadership and a coach that won't tolerate crap. It says you're not making excuses, because at the end of the season, aside from health and great football players and game plans, when you look back, you'll look back at how we handled the distractions and how mature was my locker room. And the mature teams that know how to deal with these things like that in a pandemic, which we haven't seen, but, you know, not being able to stay in a hotel the night before, deal with it, man. Everybody's got to deal with it. And we got better players, and we're not going to let the distraction kick in. We'll be the teams that are standing come January, and the winners will be standing in February.
No question. Sean, who wins more games, Patriots or Tampa Bay, and why?
A hell of a question, Lo. First off, I look at Tom's got to be pumped, man. When you look at how many times offensively he's had to carry what we would now Gronkowski, Randy Moss, and Edelman. I know good players, but over the course of his career, he's done a lot with a lot of guys who have just been guys, not the guy,
no question.
But a guy. He's elevated people's play. It's almost reversed. It's like that role when you're growing up. Your parents take care of you. And then when they get older, it flips. You got to take care of them a little bit more. Tom's at the stage. He's going to be 43. Well, he doesn't need any babysitting. The guy's a great player still. But now think about his excitement. I'm going to a team. When's the last time he had this many weapons on offense? And Bruce is fun but focused and will give him some stuff to do. So I love their roster. And I think their division's tougher, though. So, you know, you get 10 wins in that division. You got Matt Ryan to deal with. Hopefully a Carolina's competitive. We know the Saints roster is as good as theirs in the league. So if you get to 10 or 11 wins, they're going to be a Super Bowl threat. They're getting to the playoffs. So more wins, I think they're going to hover around the same because the easier path to your division, even though Buffalo's in it, is the East. And I marvel. I know that Cam Newton may not be MVP Cam Newton. Maybe he is, but a healthy 31-year-old angry specimen who's going to a disciplined coach who – will give him an opportunity. He is going to start. I'm surprised at how many people are like, well, pump the brakes on how good Cam Newton this is. And boy, does he have something to prove financially and to prove that he's healthy. I actually think the Patriots, with one player added, now we relook at the NFC or at the AFC, say, wait a minute, Patriots may have been a non-playoff team this year, but even though Stidham could have been good, if Cam's Cam at 85%, we're dealing with a team that the Buffalo Bills now are not the heavy favorite in the division. I think you're going to see them both. I'm going to say Tampa's 10 or 11 wins, and I'm going to say New England's around 9 or 10 because I think they were 7 or 8 wins without Newton. And I believe if he's healthy and plays a 16-game schedule and pissed and adjusts to McDaniels and the discipline in the building, I think that they're worthy of 10 wins. It'll be within a game or two, but I'll give Tampa a slight edge because their roster's better. But Cam Newton's going to a great opportunity, and they can still win the division with him there now, even with Buffalo in it. I think this is an underrated offseason signing.
Sean Salisbury joining us here on 95.7 The Game. All right, I'm glad you brought that up because I'm split on this. I wanted to agree with everything you were saying because I looked at what Newton did in those first 8 games under Norv Turner 2 seasons ago. He was putting up great numbers. He injures the shoulder. Obviously, the rest of the season, history knows they lost 7 of 8. That's fine. It's an injury. So he comes back healthy, then he injures the foot. All right, fine. He's battling an injury. The one thing I can't get over here is that if he's healthy, he's 31 years old, he's in his prime, he's won an MVP, we know he's got the talent, we know he's going to have the coaching, we know he's got an arsenal. Why did it take so long, and why did he go for the veteran minimum when he plays the most important position in all of sports? People keep telling me, well, COVID meant guys couldn't give him physicals. Michael Brockers signed with the Baltimore Ravens. They gave him a physical. It turned out something was wrong with the ankle. They sent him back to the Rams. So was he the only guy who couldn't get a physical done? Like, that's the one piece of information I can't seem to get over here.
No, I'm with you. I think that part of the, not that the COVID's overrated, but how people approach why Cam wasn't signed. Listen, there was, which another thing adds to, if he's not pissed, then I got a problem with it. If he's looking and saying, look, at 9 years, I know I've had my ups and downs, I started to get more accurate with Norv when I was healthy because Cam's going to hover in that 59 to 60%, but Norv elevated him. Josh McDaniels runs a lot of shallow crossers and easy completion, make the simple play. But he also, with him now, Cam gives you great vertical passing game and what Tom can't give you with his feet but does with his accuracy. Cam can now with his feet. So Josh McDaniels' challenge now, and a fun one for him, is to, I can expand some of the things I've never been able to do with a quarterback, nor have I really needed to because of Tom, the GOAT. But I'm with you, yes, but this also adds to why I think that he's got a chance to, if he's as competitive as I think he is, and I've criticized him ad nauseum over his career for the pouting at times, the if it's not about him and the attention, but I also look at him and I say, he's a really good football player, man. And sometimes the change of venues can help. So I'm not buying into the fact that, oh, you know, it's just COVID. Why? I think that people were concerned about his health. I think people were concerned about what kind of leader. I do. I think people asked that about him. But I also think the good outweighs the bad. And he should go in there angry. And was there a big market for him? No. But the competitors I know, Andre Dawson years ago when he signed, he said, I don't have a contract. Nobody wants me here. You fill in the numbers. And for $500,000, went out and had an MVP year on a last place team in baseball. So Cam's capable of this now. And at 31, this is about the time you're supposed to play your best football. So, yes, I understand, and I do understand why people are a little skeptical. But I look at it, I say, okay, what's the risk? All right, so you slow Stidham's progress down a little bit, but it's not like he was the second pick of the draft. What, a fourth rounder with big potential? It tells me that they didn't get an offseason with him, so they're not sure how he's going to handle the team with Tom out of the building. So you get Cam, he can make up to $7.5 million. What's the risk? The risk that he isn't going to control the locker room, you know, like coming with a bad attitude, because we've seen, Bill, you walk into that building, it's different. You're going to cater to what we do. We're not going to change our building for you. This is the New England Patriots, like it or not. We may not have a lot of fun, but we win and do it a particular way. So Cam's going to have to adjust a little bit of that, but players around him, look, he's a presence, and he's a big presence, and he's a big talent. So what's not to like? Okay, if he gets hurt, it'd be a bummer, but if he's healthy and if he's pissed, what's not to like? If he completes 62% but gives you some playmaking on the edge and elevates, and plays like a guy who's got Pro Bowl skills in a weak AFC East, at least it appears. Damn, it's an upgrade, and all I want for my team is John Harbaugh. I always say get 1% better every day. The New England Patriots got better on paper with Cam Newton in the building. Now we're going to find out what kind of lonely work he's been doing and how he fits in and how he processes information in a short offseason.
John Salisbury here on 95.7 The Game. Antonio Brown, a player still out there. Not sure if the league will clear him to be ready for week one. Where do you see him landing? Where would be the best fit for Antonio Brown?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of them. So X's and O's wise, guys. I mean, I look at a team like, look at the Vikings. Adding him to a team that drafted a guy. They put up numbers. They like to throw it. They got a good running game. And, you know, he can play inside and outside. Listen, his skill set's enormous. And I'm a guy that, and we say this about people, I don't like to have a lot of ifs by a guy's name. Like if I'm drafting a first-round pick or the first pick of the draft, I don't want a whole bunch of ifs by his name, because that means, well, if he's tall or if he runs or if he's healthy, if he can make the play, if his attitude's good. The key for Antonio Brown, what did he learn the last year plus? What has he learned? Has he learned how to be a better teammate? Because I know he knows how to run routes, and I know he'll put his time in. So depending on what the NFL decides, and if Antonio Brown, and maybe it's a big if, I don't know, because I'm not around him on a daily basis, just what I see like you guys and what you hear. But I hear Tom Brady pining for him, or Russ Wilson. I hear guys that want him on their team. Because if he's ripe and ready to go, meaning ripe health-wise and attitude-wise, you're getting a Pro Bowl player who's 15 touchdowns removed just a year ago. The key is his attitude going to rip apart a locker room? If it's changed and he really is humbled and learned something, and I'm okay with guys rehabbing themselves and learning, he can give you a number one talent that could go to a team and be a number two and the best number two or one of the best number twos in the league. So, oh, there's not just one roster. There's a whole bunch of rosters that could use him. Seattle could. I mean, I can start going through the rosters that could. You tell me that Arizona hadn't Hopkins and him and Fitzgerald and Christian Kirk wouldn't like another weapon. You could never have enough of them. So I can go through a bunch of them. If Antonio Brown is right and his head's clear and the NFL decides, okay, then you're going to get a hell of a talent and you're getting a 10-touchdown guy depending on who the quarterback is.
Former NFL quarterback, check him out now. He's the host of the Sean Salisbury Show, 6 to 10 a.m. Central on Sports Talk 790 in Houston. Sean Salisbury with us here on 95.7 The Game. Sean, we always appreciate the time and the insights. Thank you very much for coming on. Have a great holiday weekend.
Always honored to be on with you guys. Keep killing it, and thank you guys for having me on, and you be safe out there. I appreciate you.
You too. Thank you very much, Sean. All right, I got a dramatic pivot for you guys. Dramatic pivot. Matt Barnes, former Warrior, coming up in 5 minutes. We're going to talk to him about a bunch of stuff. One of these things that we want to talk to him about is the Orlando bubble and, shall we say, female companionship. If you're going to be in Orlando for 3 months, you're young, you're healthy, you're active, maybe you're single, maybe you're married, whatever it may be, 3 months could be a long time, no female companionship. You may ask yourself, Formbo, why are you bringing this up? Makes no sense. Stephen A. Smith on First Take. Take a listen to this.
Here's the reason you got to be worried. I wanted to hold off on saying this, y'all, but I can't hold it more. Do we really think that our the recreational activities, what these guys are accustomed to, are going to be compromised for 3 months? I mean, somebody's got to say it. Somebody's got to say it. You really, really think that people are going to be without their wives or their woman? Okay? I mean, the guys that are married without their wives, the guys that ain't married without their women, you really, really think they honor in a bubble for 3 months and are going to deprive? Somebody got to tell the truth.
Stephen A., they've set up ping pong tournaments.
They're allowed to bring their significant other down there after a month.
Hey, listen, after a month, I just said forget 3 months. They going to struggle with 3 weeks. Why you think they won in Vegas? Listen, can we stop? Can we stop? The issue right now is that you in Orlando for the first month, you got to be alone. You understand? Trust me. When guys wanted to go to Vegas, because they definitely wanted to go to Vegas, I know this for a fact, Jay, I know you know they wanted to be in Vegas. You could have rented out the Wynn and the Encore or something like that. You could have done that, all right, and had some semblance of a bubble, and cats would have been happy. The reason why they're looking at Orlando, they're like, damn, you got to go through gates, you got to go through a lot of hoops just to do anything. That's a problem for them. Somebody got to say it. These brothers, three. You said 3 months. I'm saying 3 weeks is a struggle. That's a struggle. Let's just talk about it. Stop playing the game. Say what, Max? What'd you say?
So what are they going to do? What are you saying? After 3 weeks, what happens?
Oh, I'm telling you, they're going to violate the bubble. That's what I'm telling you. I'm telling you right now.
No more distancing, Max.
Hey, listen. They're going to practice social distancing with the general public. But I'm sorry. When it comes to either your wife or if you're not married, your girl, it's a struggle, okay? I'm just telling y'all. That's what's going on here. Somebody's got to say it.
Stephen A. Smith on First Take yesterday talking about companionship in the Orlando bubble. Lo, naturally, I have to come to you as the former athlete first. Is this good for TV, what you're hearing from Stephen A. Smith? Is this a good TV segment, or is there truth behind this, that this is going to be an issue for guys, young guys, healthy guys, rich guys, successful guys, good-looking guys, going this long without any sort of companionship?
I think it's great for TV, and he's right. I think it's great for TV. It's great for everyone. It's funny. It's cool. I think it's awesome. I mean, he's just being real, talking about it, laughing about it. Remember, we started talking about it, you know, a couple of weeks back when we started going to the bubble, saying, hey, look, people are going to have issues of not staying there, or maybe wanting to get to town and find someone to hang out with, or, you know, but bars and stuff being closed. There's going to be guys, they're going to hook up. College kids, you know, it doesn't matter. Wherever we are, everyone's been on lockdown, but, you know, with your significant other or girlfriend, or even if they don't live there with you, you're finding a way. I mean, you think for all these months people have been not hooking up? I mean, of course not. So what do you expect these guys not to hook up? Are they any different? No, it's going to happen. Stephen, he's right. It's going to happen.
Kids, is this eventually what's going to derail the entire NBA plan?
It might be something that affects it. And Draymond Green had interesting comments as to why he thinks the Lakers are now the favorites. And it's in part because of LeBron James' ability to be disciplined. That's basically what Stephen A. Smith is saying. He's saying that the players won't have the discipline necessary to stay in this bubble and abstain from this extracurricular behavior, so to speak. And I don't think that every team will break, as he says. You take look at a guy like LeBron James. His teammates will not be stepping outside because he's going to make it clear how important it is. So it's a case-by-case basis, but 3 weeks, it could be a long time.
Let's go to the phones. Former Warrior, check out the podcast, All the Smoke. He co-hosted with Stack Jack, Steven Jackson, Matt Barnes, kind enough to join us here on 95.7 The Game. Matt, it's always a pleasure. We're going to bring you right into the conversation. We were just listening to Stephen A. Smith on First Take yesterday talking about the NBA, the Orlando bubble, and how a month to 3 months could be a long time for a lot of players when it comes to, shall we say, female companionship. How much of an issue do you think this could be for the NBA down in Orlando?
I mean, It's hard to say, but I definitely think Stephen A. Smith hit it on the head. It'll be interesting to see if it's really locked down like Fort Knox, or if there's ways to get people in that bubble. So, but I mean, speaking for myself, speaking for as a man, speaking as an athlete, that is a very long time to go without, if you want to say sex or whatever you want to call it, just to kind of decompress, relax, you know, keep somewhat of a normal routine. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out.
Do you think that maybe then a team that's a little bit more veteran, older guys who aren't as necessarily constantly motivated by the chase, you think those teams might have a slight advantage, like a LeBron James-led Laker team where, you know, you get in your mid to late 30s, you're not as maybe as consumed, all consumed by those thoughts?
I'm not sure if mid to late 30s you're still not consumed by those thoughts.
Old pencil sharpener still want to work, don't it? Let them know.
Right. Exactly. I mean, I think those are just thoughts of a man. So, obviously, you know, maturity and responsibility plays a huge part. You know, who the leader of your team is, and then, you know, if the guys listen to the leader. Like I said, so it's going to be something new. I'm sure there's going to be a few incidences, and hopefully, you know, everyone can stay safe within this, because we have to think this is really, you know, I was talking about this last night. How does the process work? I know there are a lot of visitors at some point. Like, where do the visitors quarantine? And if once they quarantine, how do they get in? So I think there's just a lot of unknown, and we're headed to uncharted territory. So it's going to be interesting. But like we talk about, this game is 90% mental, and that's part of the mental challenge and struggle, is being able to stay disciplined and, you know, not putting yourself or your teammates at risk to catching the virus.
No question. What is some of the biggest concerns? Let's take that off the table. What do you think? Do you think this thing happens? Does we complete this season? What's some of your concerns, other concerns, for this thing not to be successful?
I just think before they actually get there, if players continue to catch it, I think that's kind of possibly a red flag for Adam Silver in the league. You know, guys, by day kind of coming out and saying, hey, you know, I've contracted it or whatever the situation may be. But I think once they get there, I think everyone is putting their trust in Adam Silver. He's never given us a reason not to trust him and the league to maintain a safe environment. But then with that said, there's always a lot of outside variables. You know, like I said, it's a week or two, guys are going to be all for it, let's get it. But then, like you said, week three sets in, week four sets in, six, eight. You know, I mean, if you're in the championship, you're there for 3 months. You know, so that is a long time to consider, you know, guys that are millionaires and really normally play by no rules off the court, really having to stay confined to a certain area. So I'm hoping that, you know, everything goes through and we're able to get some basketball and crown a champion, but this is going to be new for all of us. So I think we just have to watch and learn.
Matt Barnes joining us here on 95.7 The Game. 22 teams invited to Orlando. Strictly from a Vegas mentality, I'm trying to figure out how many of these teams are going to be filled with guys who really don't want to be there. It's completely understandable if you're maybe the Wizards. You're really far out of this thing. Bertans isn't even going to play. You got to go down to Orlando, leave your family, take the risk. I could understand if some guys aren't 100% motivated. Of the 22 teams, do you think a big portion, a small portion, are going to feature guys that just really don't want to be there, that don't care all that much?
No, I don't think so. At the end of the day, we still, you know, they still are NBA players, and we love to play this game. So I think once you get down there, get in the atmosphere, and realize that, you know, what you love to do is you know, right ahead of you. I think everyone who actually goes there is going to be ready to play. You know, I think they've done a good job of not punishing or, you know, trying to black sheep the guys that don't want to play. You know, you got to respect their wishes. You know, if you know, obviously, staying home and protecting their family. I can use one instance for, you know, Trevor Reeves is a good friend of mine, and we had a conversation before he announced that he wasn't playing. He's just like, you know, I'm the sole provider and protector of my family, you know, and during a pandemic and everything else that's going on in this country, he's like, I don't feel safe leaving my family right now, and I completely understood and respect that. So I think the guys that are actually going there are going to be ready to play and want to play, and I think even the guys that aren't going still want to play but realize that, you know, they just have different kind of priorities as far as family or whatever their situation may be that kind of stops them from playing. At the end of the day, we're all basketball players. And once they get out there and start training and kind of catching the environment, I think everyone's going to want to play.
When you look at the run-up to get up to speed as a basketball player coming off of a 3 or 4 month break, what is that going to be like for these guys to get back into some sort of mid-season form? How much practice time, how much game time would it take after such a strange layoff?
I think you take all the other variables away. You know, if Corona is not an issue, if sneaking women in is an issue, my concern was that, you know, we stopped at, you know, mid-March when technically the best basketball of the season is being played. Everyone knows it's post-All-Star. It's kind of the best stretch run where guys are kind of getting their chemistry, getting their flow, and really ready to head into the playoffs. So to stop the game, getting its traction at that point, take 4 months off. What people don't understand is, although basketball is like riding a bike, you're not going to be as sharp on that bike when you first return, you know. So it's going to take that time for guys to try to get back in game shape, because obviously it was up to them to stay in shape during this time, but you can never simulate a real practice or a real game until you actually do it. So that was kind of my concern, is kind of really having to rev their bodies up a lot faster. And we're all creatures of habit once we get to this point, revving their bodies up super fast. And you know, in a mini training camp and in odd circumstances, playing 8 regular season games after not playing for 4 months. And then, you know, after those 8 games, you're in the actual playoffs when you're supposed to be shape physically and mentally. So hopefully barring injuries, I think it's going to be great from a standpoint of, we've never got a chance to see LeBron James this fresh, Kawhi Leonard this fresh. These are guys that historically have carried their teams the whole entire season. And when they get to the playoffs, they're dog tired, but they're still going to be able to do that. Their greatness allows them to carry the team through the playoffs. But these guys are well rested now. So I'm hoping everyone, you know, gets through the, you know, kind of the hurdles of the training camp and finishing the regular season unscathed, so we can just get, you know, a playoff series that's full of energy and excitement.
Matt, over the last couple of weeks, how effective and what have Stack Jack, how involved has he been in the community over the last couple of weeks of what everything that's been going on?
Jack's been amazing. You know what I mean? He's obviously, this hit home for him, knowing that, you know, him and George Floyd have known each other since they were teenagers. And I've been a fan of him, proud of him. You know, we talk, you know, every couple of days. And I just kind of check his temperature. You know what I mean? He's doing a lot. This is new to him. You know, obviously he said, you know, this is not something he asked for, but it was put on his plate. And, you know, I just kind of here for him to lean on, to talk to kind of give advice, because I've been in the social justice realm. And obviously the George Floyd is as big as it's gotten, but I did the Stephon Clark stuff. And even though we are doing right things, there's always going to be people that doubt you or say that you're doing it for the wrong reasons, or you're clout chasing, you're doing this and that. So kind of just keeping his head right from that standpoint, making sure he's not too consumed by it, make sure he's getting some rest and having some personal time, because this stuff can be overwhelming. And, you know, he's out here traveling the country with George's brother and hitting up all these rallies all over the country. And, you know, as a brother, I've just really been sat back and been a fan of him and been supportive in every way I possibly can.
Matt Barnes joining us here on 95.7 The Game. I wanted to ask you about an interview you did with Taylor Rooks recently. It's a terrific interview. And you made a great point about Donald Sterling when you were asked about the former Clippers owner, racist, forced to sell his team. You don't believe that Sterling was a one-off. There are other owners out there with that same mentality. Would you mind expanding upon that? Because I thought it was a fascinating answer that you gave.
I just think there is, you know, and it's, I faced extreme racism, so when, you know, people saying words or getting caught on camera or, excuse me, audio, it's not that big of a deal to me. It didn't necessarily surprise me. To me, I just thought that Donald Sterling was the only one dumb enough to get caught. But there's definitely owners that still have the same views or mentality, and that's kind of just that good old boy generation, that, you know, 70s, 80-year-olds, they were just raised that way, oil money, real estate money. And that's just the way the world was when they came up. And, you know, I don't expect them to change, you know. So, like I said, I think Donald was the only one dumb enough to get caught, but there still are owners who share his views and ideals, not only in the NBA, but in the NFL as well.
Former Golden State Warrior, check out the podcast, All the Smoke. It's on radio.com. You can find it there. He co-hosts it with Steven Jackson. Tremendous stuff every time these two get together. Matt Barnes with us here on 95.7 The Game. Matt, we always appreciate the time, man. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
No problem, fellas. Have a good one.
All right. We got an ethical dilemma we got to get to. So Doug Kazarian from ESPN is going to join us at 9:05. I just got a text from him. I work with him on some other projects. He has this great story out of Las Vegas. if you were able to place a bet on an event that had already started and you saw the score, would you make that bet? And if you won, would you expect to get paid? There's a scandal that broke out in Vegas. We're going to lay out our thoughts, and then we're going to have Doug tell you about it at 9.05 a.m. It's Joe Lowe and Dibs. But first, what's coming up on the game, brought to you by Chilton Auto Body. Chilton Auto Body is open to serve the Bay Area with contact-free auto body repair options. Along with free pickup and delivery, Chilton Auto Body now offers virtual estimates and curbside contact-free service from the comfort of your vehicle. Book an appointment today at ChiltonAutoBody.com.
Now back to Joe Lowe and Dibs.
No one said boom, just not cheer him. Big difference, Fortenbaugh.
On 95.7, The Game.
Joe Lowe and Dibs, welcome back. Great to have you with us today. A bit of a monumental moment for those of us on this show, those of you listening as well. But today is the 33-year anniversary of the launch of WFAN in New York City. 3 p.m. Eastern, July 1st, 1987, WFAN signed on at 1050, is this kilohertz? KHZ? Yep. Kilohertz? Yep. That's a guess. Replacing country music station WHN and billing itself as the world's first 24-hour-per-day sports talk radio station. New York may be considered a rival. It may be considered a mecca, the number one city in the country, however you want to slice it. But we do have to pay homage here at 95.7 The Game and all across this great country to WFAN for starting this remarkable business for which we find ourselves. The first voice heard on WFAN was Susan Waldman with a sports update. Does anyone know who the first sports show was? After Susan Waldman gave the update, this name came on. It was the first show. It's hosted by someone you know. You do know the name. I'm not going to say it's the most prominent name in the world, but you do know it. Any guesses, Dibs?
Yeah, but first I got to do my goodness gracious, my Susan Waldman impersonation. Georgie,
there you go.
Derek Jeter's in George's box. It's one of the great Susan Waldman monologues of all time. I'm going to go with a local Bay Area legend, Pete Franklin, the late, great Pete Franklin. Joe, that's my guess.
Pete Franklin is a good guess because as I go further down the Wikipedia page, it says other hosts besides the name of the question are the answer. During WFAN's 15 months at 1050 kilohertz included Bill Mazur, Pete Franklin, Greg Gumbel, Art Shamsky, and Ed Coleman. Low, any guesses at all? You know the individual, but you don't know him well. It's not a huge name, but it's a name that we're all going to recognize once I say it.
Yeah, I was thinking about gumbo, but you already got it. I love gumbo. It's so good. Was that nice, Dibs? You can
tonight,
appreciate that, right?
On Real Sports. Very good. Bryant Gumbo, Greg Gumbo, and of course, Gumbo. Gumbo Moore. Right. That was incredible.
The first show was hosted by Jim Lampley. Jim Lampley, who you remember from HBO Boxing. He did a lot of Olympics coverage. Jim Lampley was the first show on WFAN in New York City when sports radio started 33 years ago today. Dibs, when did you start? You couldn't have started too long after this, right? Like, when did you get in the radio?
Yeah, 32 years and 11 months ago, actually, Joe. I was...
get out of here.
Not quite right on the heels. I started in sports talk radio in about 2005. So I was in radio back to 99, but I always wanted to be a television sports play-by-play announcer when I grew up. There was no such thing as sports talk radio, and I remember when it started to spread across the country, I never envisioned that I would have a career doing it, but yet here we are some 20 or so years later.
Speaking of television broadcasting, did you see Marv Albert will not be going to the bubble in Orlando? Arguably, in the eyes of many, the best play-by-play voice the NBA has ever had. He's opted out. He was going to go, and then he saw the recent surge in coronavirus outbreak in the state of Florida, which is through the roof right now. And at 79 years of age, he said, you know what? This one's probably not for me. So he's opting out. It's going to be tough to not have Marv there, but you completely understand it, obviously.
Yes, you have to understand it. Not only, and I don't even know if the NBA has put out their plan for whether or not broadcasters will actually be courtside, or are they going to watch the game off a monitor? I think there's still some question as to how all that's going to be handled. But you think about somebody who's 80 years of age, obviously more susceptible than other people to the COVID-19. It makes good sense, although it is going to be kind of a bummer to not have Marv there.
Lo, help me with this. Would you watch this? Netflix is set to produce a 6-part series on Colin Kaepernick. It's going to be directed by Ava DuVernay. It's going to be called Colin in Black and White. And explains his high school years. So it's going to go back to the high school years of Colin Kaepernick, 6-part series. He's going to appear as a narrator, and then they're going to have an actor who plays him in the series. There's no date set for the release. I'm curious, would you be interested in watching such a piece from Netflix?
Believe it or not, I think more people are going to be interested in watching it now than they would have been if it just came out. So, yes, I'm going to watch it. I'd love to watch it. Interested in just see kind of his Turlock days in high school and grade school, see kind of some of the things, because a lot of, you know, people's past we don't know about. So I would love to. Love to know about his family. I think it's adopted. I don't know how it worked out, but without a doubt, I definitely would be interested in watching it.
So here's the thing with this. I'm not really. And it's not because I don't like him. I want to see what happened with the change from being NFL quarterback Colin Kaepernick to being activist Colin Kaepernick. That's what I'm most interested in. Like, I'm sure his high school years, which will be played by an actor, I'm sure there's some stuff there that's interesting, but a 6-part series of what he was like in high school, there's going to be stuff that helped shape him and mold him, and I understand that. That could be compelling, but I'd be so much more interested in just one episode or two episodes. I don't need 6. Just give me what happened when he went through that change, when he met Nessa, when he went from just being NFL quarterback Colin Kaepernick to NFL quarterback, activist, leader Colin Kaepernick. That's what I'm most interested in about in his career, and I'm sure at some point we'll get something like that. But for this, 6 parts on high school, okay. I mean, I'm sure there's something to it, Dibs.
Yeah, and it just depends on how it's made and what they focus on, and I think you will see a lot of the early kind of fundamental pieces to what made Colin Kaepernick the man that he would eventually become. And I'm kind of with Lo, the curiosity of the Turlock days and how much do they show, you know, the area of Modesto and Turlock and the Central Valley and just portray the nature of that area and how it was growing up to be an adopted kid, a biracial kid, star athlete, and some of the challenges he faced as a young person in the Central Valley. And, oh, by the way, you got to find an actor who can throw the baseball too, because he was throwing 92 in high school. So you got to find the right actor who can pull off the on-field football, but also the on-field baseball.
And basketball, right? Didn't he play? So I think that's going to be the fascinating thing about it, Joe. It's just like to have a kid that's adopted, that's in a white family, that's brought up by a white family, that's a biracial, you know, this black kid, to be able to say, you know, how was your emotions and different things formed, and hey, you're in a Turlock where it's not a lot of blacks. I'd love to see. And then, like you said, when's the transformation? When did you change? What was it? How are you viewed in your community? There's a lot of things that I can think would be very, very intriguing, especially from, you know, being in Modesto and the Turlock area. I think that it's going to be fascinating to look in the behind the scene to see kind of how he was raised and those different things that he went through as a young youth.
Going back to the Matt Barnes interview, he agrees with Stephen A. Smith, and Lo, you agreed with him as well. Like, this idea that these guys, these NBA players, are going to get down to Orlando, they're going to be in the bubble, and then for that first 3 weeks to a month, they are going to be without, we'll call it, female companionship. And him talking about, Stephen A. Smith talking about, you talking about how, there's going to be an interest in making that happen. And the Chilton Auto Body text line, 95795, used to be the number. It's now 888-957-9570, made a great point about how these guys have plenty of cash. If you just need to grease some low-level Disney worker to let you sneak a few people in, I'd have to imagine you're going to be able to pull that off, right? There are so many people that view coronavirus one way, and then there's people that view it another way. So if you're trying to sneak people in, you're probably going to be able to pull that off, aren't you, Lo?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, I remember being the Saints and, you know, being a youngster right out of college. dude, you've seen stuff that was going down. We're in La Crosse, Wisconsin, having training camp in La Crosse, Wisconsin. And you got people, security there and all this stuff, but you find a way, sneak people or leave or sneak out or do certain things that happen. You see things happen. You didn't do it as a rookie because you're like, shoot, those guys, you know. But the veterans, some of the vets, they're used to it. They know they're not going anywhere. They got a sphere of influence on the team, and coaches ain't going to get rid of those cats. So I think without a doubt you'll see some of these things happen. So, yeah, it happened.
You better have gravitas, because I saw Joe. I was doing play-by-play for the San Jose Sabercats, and we went up and took on Spokane, and there was a couple players further down the roster who tried a little sneakery, a little late-night sneakery into the indoor pool, and it was all fun and fine and a lot of laughs. And then in the morning, you look around the team bus as we're heading over to the arena for the game. It's like, huh, where's old 71? Oh, 71 was sent home because of some late-night sneakery. So you got to make sure you have the gravitas low. Like Lo's saying, as a rookie,
right. You
know, if City Champ, for example, wanted to maybe violate protocol, it was going to be viewed differently than some rook out of Fresno.
Absolutely.
And would they spend the night, or did they just come in, hang out, so to speak, and then leave?
Well, I can't remember. I think like on weekends, we could be off and we have to report for the next day by 12. Like say if he gave us a day off, he would say, hey, some guys, if you want to leave, or wife or significant other was flying in, he'd say, hey, be back in the hotel or the back in the dorms by 12. So the next day or something like that. So guys would do that. And then you really couldn't have anyone there at the dorms. You wouldn't want your girl there at the dorms, you know, anyway. So, but you know, there was a time or two, you might seen someone, you know, doing, because a lot of people are already gone. You might have seen someone straggle out of the dorm. But most of the time, guys would either, you know, a veteran guy would, you know, hey, I got to go to the store, or, you know, because he got security there. And he's like, hey, I'm going, I'll be back. And, you know, so he bounces and whatever. But most of the times it's an older guy. Younger guys, they're not thinking about that. Hell, you're just trying to make a team. I think that you're going to be over there in this bubble. A lot of these guys are already in the NBA. A lot of them already been playing. They got a whole season, during their whole season, in their belt. It's going to be tough to keep everyone under wraps. Will it be a lot of guys doing it? No. There's going to be guys that understand the importance of doing that, like a Laker team, like people say. But Clippers, there's other teams that are going to, you know, be tight and keep it tight and keep it right. And there's just going to be a lot of guys that are going to probably, that five-angle knuckle shuffle and old piss pump is going to be going flowing a lot. So they'll figure it out, man. They'll figure it out. There's other things you can do. So I think you'll see a majority of guys, you know, keep it right, keep it tight.
All right, if a game started and a sports book was allowing you to bet on it an hour after it had started, right? They make a mistake, and an hour after it starts, you can still place a bet, and you win that bet. Should the sports book have to pay you? Wild story out of Las Vegas. Doug Kazarian from ESPN has the details on it. We're going to lay that out, plus the ethical dilemma for you next. Joe Lo and Dibs, 95.7 The Game.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.